Welcome to Going Viral, a podcast where we talk about all things infectious diseases. Today we'll talk about equitable vaccine distribution and the challenges that historical medical racism present to vaccine hesitancy in San Francisco. Joining us today will be Mamuli Tugbenyo, who is the Chief of Policy at the Department of Human Resources for the City and County of San Francisco. He is quite accomplished. He has been Policy Director, Deputy Administrator, and Legislative Aides for multiple nonprofits. In his new role as the Chief of Policy, he acts as a liaison between the Executive Branch and the Legislative Branch, which both develop policy independently. When the policy impacts employees for the City and County of San Francisco, he works with them to develop and adapt them. Let's hear from him now.
Good afternoon, Mamuli Tugbenyo, Chief of Policy at the Department of Human Resources in San Francisco. Nice to meet you all.
Here's our first question from Mamuli. Communities that have historically experienced medical racism, such as the Black and Latino populations, have expressed a distrust in the vaccine and said they would opt not to take it. What efforts is the City and County of San Francisco making to dissuade concerns of medical racism and encourage widespread vaccination?
I guess I would say first that, you know, there are a lot of communities of color, especially like Black and Latino communities, where I know it's been said in the media and other venues that, you know, they don't want to take the vaccine. And I guess I would first say that what I've heard from folks is that most people have not said that they don't want to take it. They just said that they want to wait to take it and let others go ahead of them and see how it goes. And, you know, then they'd be willing to take it. So I think that really is just sort of a indicator of, I think you already used the term medical racism that has happened historically in the country. And I think just like other racism and structural racism in general, understanding and being sensitized to historical trauma that Black and Latino communities have suffered throughout the years sort of informs how our communities access healthcare, because we're not all the same. We are all human beings, but we don't have the same experiences. We're not the same. So just understanding what, we'll just speak about Black people in this country specifically, have been subjected to in the past, you know, medical exploitation, medical experimentation. We have to sort of understand that history and understand why there is some hesitation from folks. You know, we think about, I believe his name is Dr. Sims, who is considered to be the father of modern gynecology, who, you know, in the 1800s performed experiments without anesthesia on enslaved Black women, horrific hours-long procedures on these women without any sort of anesthetic. And so, and that was sort of done because of a belief that Black people did not suffer pain in the same way that white people did.
The persistence of racial bias in medicine is fueled by this belief that Black people and white people have fundamental biological differences which result in differences in pain tolerance. These beliefs were originally used by scientists, physicians, and slave owners to justify the inhumane treatment of Black people in medical research. Even today, research shows that physicians are more likely to underestimate Black patients' pain levels compared to white patients' pain levels, thereby extending racial bias into the prescription of pain-relieving drugs.
Think about Henrietta Lacks, a Black woman in the early 1940s, 1950s, I believe, whose cells were taken during medical procedures without her knowing. And her cells were basically immortal. And those cells basically became the basis of, you know, a lot of medical advancements from cancer to HIV to now even COVID. And you know, those cells were stolen without her knowledge, and they used them to create all these new ventures in medicine, which is, you know, really great. And those cells are helping millions of people still today, but she never got credit for any of that until, I think, 2010. You know, I think most people are familiar with the Tuskegee experiment, where Black men were experimented on with syphilis and, you know, just made to live with the disease without treatment until they either went blind or went insane. or they died. And so all that is just to say that there is, you know, a lot of rightful history, and there's a lot of rightful hesitation with the vaccine among some individuals. And, you know, a lot of people say, you know, well, that was such a long time ago, you should get over it. Slavery was a long time ago, just get over it. You know, but these are things that are passed on through generations. And it's almost, you know, a part of our DNA at this point. And so, you know, I think it really just takes education and communication and understanding about that history to make sure that we're reaching our communities that are most impacted by COVID, and to make sure that they get the vaccine. So sorry, that was a long answer, but hopefully I did everything.
So keeping in mind everything that you just said about histories of medical racism, particularly for Black folks in the US, which I'm sure that working in a progressive city, or as, you know, progressive as you can get in the US, I'm sure that the departments of public health and your department are very aware of how those histories play into people's trust of the government. And I'm wondering, to try and get people vaccinated, is your strategy there to like show the process of producing the vaccine and how medical racism may or may not have entered? Or is it by getting community leaders to help build trust? Or do you know what strategies have been taken to kind of talk about?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a combination of some of the things you mentioned. I would just say, I think, luckily, thank God, we have a mayor that is a Black woman that grew up in some of the most challenging circumstances you can grow up in, understands the importance of not imposing certain things on communities, but instead working with communities to help them understand the science behind what we're asking them to participate in, you know, the benefits and all of that. We have a strong advocacy among our Latino community through the Latino Task Force and our immigrant communities and our Black community. And so I think we've been working with those various coalitions of individuals, as well as leaders from the community, to sort of first help them get educated and then organize various town halls and meetings to help people understand. I think we've had close to 100 different community events or town halls to talk about COVID, educate people about what exactly COVID is and the science behind masking and the science behind the vaccine. So I would say that has all been very helpful, to the point that, you know, we can't get vaccine out fast enough. It's similar to a lot of places, but, you know, people really want to take the vaccine. But also our, what we call our COVID command center, our, you know, sort of hub of information where we're running our COVID response out of, we, since the beginning, a year ago, back in January or February, we had an equity officer that was part of the executive team that helped make some of the decisions with, you know, the rollout of, you know, all the various policies and decisions that we were making. And so that position still exists. And we also have a very strong human rights commission that has been working with, you know, minority communities on education as well. We've opened high volume vaccination sites in the specific communities that have been most impacted by COVID. So our Mission District in San Francisco has the highest population of the Latino community, and Bayview District has the highest population of our African-American community. And so we've opened a couple of locations strategically in or around those neighborhoods to make sure that we're getting access to the vaccine to those communities, and making sure that individuals are from the zip code where those communities live, to make sure that they're getting the vaccine first if they choose to take it.
Can you explain the phased process of vaccination distribution in San Francisco in terms of 1A and 1B? And how were the decisions surrounding prioritization of vulnerable populations made, and were they received well?
Phase 1A, yes, it was prioritized for healthcare workers that worked in acute care settings. And we're starting to move into phase 1B, tier one, which is a lot of our public safety, emergency service workers. And it has most certainly been a challenge. You know, there's the limited vaccine supply that we are receiving. And then we also have one of the largest healthcare systems in San Francisco. So that means a lot of healthcare workers. That means a lot of people coming into San Francisco to receive their healthcare. Yeah, it has certainly been a challenge to implement the tier system, but I'd say we are doing as good a job as I think you can do based on the parameters we have to work in. We've just started vaccinating our 65-year-old and older populations, and I've been getting a lot of direct emails from that population saying that the system worked really well and it went really quickly, and they were just really happy with the results. So that's a really good feedback that just I've been getting just the last couple of days.
Just following on to that, I was reading an article the other day in the LA Times talking about vaccine hunters and how some people will travel out of their regional area to look for extra doses. And typically that is in, you know, areas with a high minority population. Have you found that is happening at, you know, a noticeable rate?
Not in San Francisco, but, you know, I have relatives and friends that live in states in the Midwest, and I've heard of people, you know, maybe not being as truthful as they should be when signing up to take the vaccine, maybe saying that they're a healthcare worker when they're, you know, an artist or a, you know, interior designer and getting the vaccine. So, you know, there are those cases. But I have not heard of any specific cases of, you called it vaccine hunter in the Bay Area, but, you know, I'm sure it exists. In San Francisco, like, as I mentioned, a lot of people, we have 38,000 employees, as I said, and a lot of those, about half our employees live in the city and about half of them live out. And so plenty of them are getting their vaccine in their home counties. Some people that live in San Francisco that may work other places are getting them in other counties, but also the state is opening up a mass vaccination center at the Oakland Coliseum, which is, you know, the next city over from us. So there will most certainly be a lot of people going to get the vaccine there. That's a FEMA site, and that's why that's possible.
Sanitation workers and food service workers, for example, are employees who are relatively low on the priority list, but also have increased risk of exposure. How have you been addressing their concerns about being deprioritized and sort of the public anger surrounding it?
I'm fielding calls every day from various department heads and other folks that, you know, are upset about the rollout and upset about how long it's taking. But the fact is that there just isn't enough supply right now to vaccinate everybody. And so that is why I believe the state implemented the tiered system. And, you know, we just have to do our best to work with what we have and get as much vaccine out as quickly as we can, as quickly as we get it. And so, you know, there's a lot of anxiety, a lot of anger, but you know, we will get through it. We will work through it. And, you know, we have a system in place that has made us prepared to get the vaccine out as quickly as we get in. And so we feel pretty confident in that system. But yeah, fact is there just isn't enough supply, unfortunately.
Your job sounds very stressful. Thank you for doing what you do.
Thank you.
I have a quick follow-up question. And so you were talking about the opening of these mass vaccination sites like the Oakland Coliseum. I was wondering whether there are any estimates of when the Bay Area will reach herd immunity.
So I think there are some estimates. I am not a public health official. I did almost become a doctor, but I never made it. So I'm probably not the most qualified to answer that question, but I know there is plenty of modeling out there. I think what we're focused on is just making sure that we're vaccinating as many people as we can. We're trying to vaccinate 900,000 San Franciscans, which is, you know, basically our population by June. And, you know, as long as we can hit that mark, it won't be too far from now.
Ever since the onset of the pandemic, public officials around the world have faced increased stress with the hefty responsibility to ensure the mitigation of the pandemic. As we heard, people are facing significant stress and anxiety, which we imagine would only worsen when compounded with systemic injustices such as unequal vaccine distribution. Based on this information, we were curious to find more information about efforts to increase equity in the medical field locally in San Francisco. Let's hear what he has to say about that.
I would say in general, around the medical system, there is trust that needs to be rebuilt, there's education that needs to happen, and there's representation that needs to be seen. People need to know that their doctors and nurses and other healthcare providers understand their experiences and things that they have been through. And so that is one of the pushes that our department is making, is to hire more healthcare providers and nurses specifically that are of color. San Francisco is a very diverse city, but it's not necessarily the San Francisco that I remember as a kid. But, you know, I remember coming here at 5, 6 years old and just being completely floored and wowed by all the different people that I saw. And that is the reason that I fell in love with San Francisco and why I love crossing the bridge every weekend to come here. And that is not necessarily the case anymore for the city. San Francisco is still an amazing place, but we have a lot of work to do around equity and diversity. And so again, that's part of the reason why we are working to hire more nurses of color, police officers of color, women, police officers, and you know, just creating a more diverse workforce in general, because that representation is important. And it's not just important to see somebody that looks like you, that is a key component, but it's also, as I mentioned, just making sure those people share the same experiences as you. And the way that somebody may respond to a treatment or answer a question, it may be perceived differently by, you know, a Black gay man than a straight white dude. That is important. And so that is what we're focused on in my department. And, you know, it is a lofty goal, but it is important and we're working to get there.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your perspective with us and giving us more information about vaccine rollout and distribution politics in San Francisco. To our wonderful audience, thank you for listening today, and we invite you to join us next week where we're going to take a deeper dive into the HPV vaccine and access in lower-income countries. Tune in next week for more on Going Viral.